you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
Hello, hello, loyal listeners of the Part of the Problem podcast. It is time for another fireside chat, checking in with the fire, the king of the cocks, Robbie Bernstein. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm doing well, man. I was built for quarantine. This is great. I don't have to go out and I don't have to feel bad about it. I love it.
Yeah, but what we're all wondering is, what are you doing for sandwiches at a time like this?
I made my mom step it up because at first there was no bread in this house. There was nothing, dude. I was sandwich free. I was eating rice. I'm not a rice guy. That was my grain. I was having to eat rice and salad. But for Sabbath, she made a delicious challah bread, and now I'm slicing that up every day. I had French, dude. I had some good French toast today,
dude. And challah makes the best French toast. I don't care who you are. You could be the most hardcore neo-Nazi. You have to admit, challah bread French toast is just the way to go. Just give us that. I'll concede everything else about the Jews, but give us the challah bread. It's my only demand.
I don't think we get enough credit for our bread. I was thinking about that because I think bagels are Jewish, and like bagels compete with anything. Between that and challah bread, you don't really need to start venturing off to other breads. I could commit to that.
You know what really set us back as a people was matzah. Is that matzah's put out there in the forefront? Like, that's our big thing. Hey, everybody, a fucking dry, bland cracker. That's what we Jews are all about. And people are like, these people are fucking insane. And then also running the banks and the media. That's also
matzah's so bad. What's great about the Passover holiday is, like, by the end of it, you're like, nah, this thing's pretty good. And then the first bite of bread you have afterwards, you're like, oh, that is some garbage.
I've never actually made it through a Passover without having bread. I've I was never like religious, you know, as a kid, but I remember one year being like maybe like 11 and I was like, I'm going to do it just as like a kind of, you know, self-sacrifice type thing. Can I just give up bread and eat this matzah? And I think I made it 2 days before, like, my friends were like, we're going to grab pizza. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like an excellent idea.
It's easier just being paleo and not eating any bread than eating matzah.
Yeah. Yeah. Paleo. I'm not on the paleo diet, but I've been told by many left libertarians that I am in fact a paleo conservative. So I don't know. I'm going to eat what I want to eat, but I don't know. All right. That went nowhere. So,
I don't do labels. So I checked out on that one.
There you go.
Gay, straight, paleo, neoliberal, not a liberal, whatever you want to be.
Yeah. Whatever you want to be. Just, let's not spend $2 trillion. That's fine with me. And as that, of course, is the big, development since last we spoke, is that all of those hardcore libertarians in Congress they had to just, you know, suck it up and abandon their pure free market principles to, in the drop of a hat, spend $2 trillion, the largest stimulus bill to come out of Congress in the history of the country, and I'm pretty certain in the history of the world. A $2 trillion bill filled with all types of wonderful pork corporate projects. I think it was $250 million to the Kennedy Center because, of course, you know, how else can you fight coronavirus unless the Kennedy Center gets a couple hundred million?
What does the Kennedy Center do?
I don't know. I think they have a library. This has nothing to do with any of this shit. It's all different. You know, like it's
homeless people need books to sneeze in.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's just a huge corporate giveaway, basically. And then some it looks like some crumbs for the average American citizen.
You know what I was realizing is kind of funny about the crumbs that they're giving to the average citizen? The $1,000 they're giving me is going to go right to my rent. It seems like they're giving everyone the perfect amount of money that landlords, banks, or whatever people you really are beholden to won't have to take a loss on those bills. And one of the things I saw, and this was just in the New York Post, but one of the handouts to the bank as a part of this bailout is they don't have to write down any debt for the next couple months. So when they're like looking at the reserve ratios, which I think are now at like 8 or 9%, whatever defaults happen over the next 2 months, like let's say someone, I don't know, let's just throw a crazy number out there, but someone had $1 trillion at Chase Bank and they default on that, they don't have to write it down right now. It's another way of manipulating the deposits. But you got to realize, like, the money that they're handing us, they're handing us the perfect amount of money so that we can keep those institutions alive without them having to do write downs. It's not really much of a bailout for you or me. It's a bailout for my landlord.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And of course, they did whatever it is, they deferred, you know, like mortgage payments. So your landlord's not going to have to pay his mortgage for 90 days, I guess. It's kind of unclear to me what exactly happens after those 90 days. Like, do you owe all three of those months now all of a sudden? Or do you just have to pay it over the time until your, you know, like mortgage matures or whatever? But either way, it's all, you know, it really is like Harry Brown, the great Harry Brown, used to say that government breaks your leg and then offers you a crutch. And that's, I think, what you see all over the place here is that government causes this disaster, then puts people in a situation where they're completely vulnerable, don't know how they're going to do this, and then they offer you a crutch. But the reality of the situation is that I'm not going to say, even Bob Murphy, when he was on the show that I just released, the bonus episode with him, where he said, and I think there was a good point to this, where he was like, well, look, if there was ever an argument that government should give money to somebody, this would be the time if government is forcing you to not work. Like, if government's forcing somebody to not work who wants to work, you could argue that they owe them that compensation. You know what I mean? Like, in the same way that we may not like eminent domain, but we wouldn't argue against the government having to compensate the person who they kick out of their home. Like, they do owe them, you know, something for kicking them out. So government clearly has caused this problem, whether or not you think it's good and necessary to stop the spread of the virus. That's beside the point. Government has caused this problem. So even in theory, if you're like, oh, okay, well, government owes them this money, or you're just like, you know what, we have to do this, that's that. The cost, the long-term cost of bailing out all of the big banks again, of all of these corporate handouts, is going to be so much greater than the benefit of your $1,200 check that you're going to get in the mail from the government. That basically all they did was borrow from the future of the taxpayers. And it's awful to see. It's just, man, there's the people of this country just get ripped off time and time again.
A couple things on that. Firstly, that when you got that line off on Jimmy Dore, that was awesome with the crutch example. That's such like a poetic way of explaining the entire concept. I'm really concerned because the same way you were talking about this with Bob Murphy, that they're telling us, hey, you don't need masks. They've kind of been telling us, hey, you don't need to stockpile goods. Like, don't be crazy. Go to the store, get what you need. But I don't know to what extent factories and supply lines are actually shut down right now. And if 2 months from now, you're giving everybody money to go spend at the same time where factories aren't remaking all of these goods, I think we might have a brief episode of some real inflation. Like, I just don't understand how you give out money, helicopter money, at the same time that you're disrupting people's ability to manufacture goods. And there isn't going to be some sort of a squeeze on the amount of people that want, you know, available goods. It just seems like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I completely agree. And of course, you know, as you refer to my appearance on Jimmy Dore, and I was searching through, I don't usually do this, but I was looking through a lot of the comments on the video because it's a particularly interesting thing of like, oh, like how am I being received by this audience? And there were a lot of really good ones, and that was like kind of, you know, made me feel nice. But a lot of people, you know, I think the left wing mindset, or at least, and this is people who listen to Jimmy Dore, so this is like, you know, kind of the best of the left wing mindset. This isn't like Rachel Maddow viewers, you know what I mean? Who are going to be like, he's a Russian agent or something. You know, like this is, these are good principled anti-war, anti-deep state, anti, you know, corporatist leftists. And a lot of what it is it's just, it's like they go like, well, you have nothing. You know, it's like, okay, so you don't really have a plan. Now, of course, I don't think that's fair. I think I've actually gone out of my way to propose many times what I think the libertarian plan ought to be. I mean, it would, you know, obviously, if I had my ideal situation, it'd be like, yeah, repeal all of the red tape, unleash the free market, let people start, let any company that wants to start making masks, making tests, making kits, let people experiment with different drugs, you know, forget all these FDA restrictions, repeal the income tax. Repeal all the taxes on retirement accounts, allow people access. I would retroactively repeal the income tax for 2019. Let people go get all the money back. Let everything that was withheld, every cent of it. That's going to be a lot more than $1,300 for everybody who's fucking working. So, you know, like, it's, I don't agree with it, but they're from their point of view, they're like, well, listen, however we got here, whatever, yada, 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 however we got here, what are we going to do right now? Because we're in this fucking disaster and we need to help people right now. And you seem to not, you know, have any government solution. And I just got to say, and maybe this is what I would say if I was pressed on that by a Jimmy Dore type or somebody, you know, of who's a listener of his, is that it was remarkable to me looking through these comments. I go, these are the exact same, identical arguments that were thrown at me by all of the neocons when I was on CNN. This is exactly what they'd say. They'd go, so Dave, you just want to do nothing. You have no plan. And by no plan, of course, the only alternative to the only possible plan that we're talking about is let's go bomb some more people in the Middle East. That's what they mean by you want to do nothing. Like, you don't want to kill people in the Middle East. And the same with their mentality is like, so you just want to do nothing. You just want, and by something, they mean the state has to take some type of action. And so that's the kind of disconnect. By the way, I had a great time on there, and I love Jimmy Dore. I really admire that guy. I think he's fucking got balls for days, and he's been right about so many of the most important issues over the last, you know, 3 years or so on his show. So, and I've said so many times on the podcast before that I admire that guy. But it just seems like you're almost stuck in this mentality. It's the same with the neocons, where the only tool that we have is a hammer. And in that case, it's the military taking military action. And in this case, it's the government taking some type of redistributive action. And if you're not for hammering some nails, then it's like, well, fucking, you don't want to do anything. And the truth is that I'm going like, well, we're not precisely hammering in nails. We are knocking the wall down right now, and the ceiling's falling in on us. And that's the, and it's hard. I understand when you're in the middle of a crisis, you want to think, okay, what can we do right now? But you have to at a certain point, and I feel like libertarians, like, we're the only ones who ever talk this way about any of this stuff. At a certain point, you have to realize what created this whole mess to begin with, and fucking what, you know, like how did we get here? And let's stop doing that. I mean, otherwise, you never solve these problems.
The way I kind of see it is some people, they're optimistic that there's, I guess, some sort of an ideal government framework by which these goods and services can actually be distributed. Whereas you and I go, no, they'll never be able to do that. We're like negative on that outlook. We're like, you can never do that. Your best bet is going to be on the free market. And we're more optimistic that the free market could actually distribute these things. Similarly, the way people panic about global warming, I go, I don't really think it's that much of a risk. I really think that we could solve some of those issues. But then I get really nervous about debt. And I go, hey, debt's like the worst thing and we'll never get past it. It's just kind of different sensibilities for what we should be optimistic about. But on the government one, being able to handle these things such as UBI, like, I think it's just certifiably wrong. Like, yeah, we're in this mess because of them, especially on the healthcare side. You just look at all the fucking laws of permits and who's allowed to give out care and what drugs are allowed to be tested and go to market and all, like, there's so much red tape there that even at the outset of this thing, just the testing, which is the biggest botch of everything, that was government's fault. So,
well,
you know.
I completely agree with you, except I would just say, I don't even know if it's the biggest botch, because there's other that are right up there. Like, the fact is that the biggest problem with this crisis, look, is as much as it's sometimes kind of cold to talk about things in this way, but if you just look at the number of deaths, that have come out from coronavirus. This is actually nothing compared to other things that we face. I mean, I was watching the news last night with my wife, and they were like, you know, saying Italy has now had 10,000 deaths due to the coronavirus. And they're like, this is a number that none of us can handle or wrap our heads around. And you're like, man, I mean, okay, it's terrible. Don't get me wrong, but we lose what, something like 30 to 60,000 every year from the flu every year. So it's not as if this is some number of deaths that are unprecedented. Like, we've never seen anything like this before. It's a nasty virus. And it seems like people in the, you know, who are immune compromised or older can die from it. But that's true for pretty much every nasty virus. And there's a whole bunch of them out there and other things, you know, tuberculosis and all these things that just kill a lot more people. So it's not that. The issue seems to be, to me, that it's highly contagious and that a percentage of people need to be hospitalized. And we did not have the capacity in our hospitals to accommodate that many more people, because we still have all the other things that we're used to dealing with, people getting hospitalized for, but all of a sudden there's way more people who need it and we don't have them. So like Tom Wood said on the show last week, he said, look, not me or you don't know how many hospital beds there should be in America. We can safely say 300 million would be too many and 1,000 would be too little, but we don't know exactly how many there are. But if you look around the country at these like certificate of need laws and a bunch of other, you know, red tape that stop, you can very comfortably say there would be more than there are now if we didn't have these restrictions. So we don't know exactly what the number would be, but there'd be more and we'd be way better prepared to accommodate the what we need right now.
And you definitely don't need all the hospital beds with those fancy settings that go up, down. And I'm sure these ventilators are all 45, you know, 65 or 45. There's definitely cheaper options for all of these for like plan B when everyone needs it all at once. But they're not, I don't know, I guess they're not really thinking in that way or planning in that way. Maybe they'll change.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. The other thing, that I would say that really, I think, and this is hard, I just think it's hard to get other people to appreciate this. Like something you were saying about the sensibilities of people and your mindset, your own inner psychology, like what personality type you are, because the people like us have always cared about monetary policy and really focused on that as a main, very, you know, centrally important issue. And a lot of people just don't. It just doesn't. Whatever it is, it just doesn't register with them as something that they put a lot of like emotional, you know, chips into. But I just think about, you know, the fact that we came off of the era of 0% interest rates, you know, from what was it, something like 7 full years of 0%. And then even after that, the entire Obama administration was the lowest interest rates in the history of the country. And you go, look at what effect that had on the saving rate. Now, again, we don't know exactly what the savings rate would be if the interest rate was higher, but we know for sure it would be more, that more people would have saved money if they were incentivized to do so than when they're completely incentivized not to save money. And think about a situation like this right now. The people who are screwed over the most are the ones who have nothing in savings. And so we've got, you know, the monetary policy has done everything it could. I mean, if you let's say that your stated goal from 2008 to 2018 or whatever was not to save the economy or all of this other or whatever else they claim it was. Let's say your stated goal was to destroy the American saver, the family savings, individual savings in this country. If that was your goal and you were the Federal Reserve chairman or you were the board of trustees at the Federal Reserve, you would have embarked on the exact same policy, the exact same policy that you had. This would be the best thing you could do to discourage people from saving. And so we did that. Whether that was the reason or not, we, in effect, that's what we did. And now we find ourselves at a crisis where everything's shut down. And man, you could really use some savings, but we did everything we could to discourage that. All right, let's take a quick second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is the Ridge Wallet. If you guys don't know about the Ridge wallet, it's incredible. You have to ditch that old wallet that you have. It's your grandfather's wallet. You're walking around with gift cards with no money on them, receipts from 1982. It's throwing your spine out of alignment, and it just doesn't look cool. The Ridge wallet is a minimalist front pocket wallet with two plates of titanium. It looks awesome. It's super easy to clean. I know people are concerned about that in these times. It just holds everything you need. It holds your cards and your cash. It's light. It doesn't mess up your back. It's just a clear improvement, and you got to go check it out over at Ridge.com. They have a bunch of other great products too. They have 30,000 five-star reviews, and that's just because their products are incredible. So go to Ridge.com/POTP, and if you use the promo code POTP, you'll get 10% off your entire order. Again, they're a great company, a bunch of great products, and they help support our show, so please go support them. Ridge.com/POTP, and the promo code is POTP for 10% off. Go check that out today. All right, let's get back into the show. So again, it's just, you know, I understand it might frustrate some people that this is, well, but you're just saying what we could have done in the past. We need an action right now. But it's like, look, man, we are, if you don't learn the mistakes of history, you're doomed to repeat them. And if we don't examine what created this situation, then we're not going to be able to solve the problem.
Yeah, it would also be interesting if, because you said it earlier, they basically gave us a $1,200 bribe to look the other way while they bail out the banks.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting if private individuals, if there was enough savings that everyone got into this disaster and like, all right, well, I got savings, I'll be okay for a couple months. And then what politicians would have had to have done to be able to get the bailouts for all these big companies. Because then you could have really separated, there's mainstream America, and then there's this banking apparatus that's robbing us of our money.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely right. But instead, you have everybody, just everybody in the political world, just rolling over and accepting the corporate bailouts. I mean, even Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and people like that, who you would think maybe would be the ones that would oppose it from the Democratic side, they've basically all said, like, well, we want people to get bailed out, too. You know, like, we'll give you your corporate bailouts, but you also got to bail out the people. And then basically all of the Republicans, with a couple notable exceptions, were just like, no, we're not doing this. But all the rest of them, just right away, it's like, yep, got to bail them out. It's just like 2008. Yep, that's right. We've claimed all these years we're for small government and, the free market. But now this is what has to happen. And of course, that is giving a major shot in the arm, and in some ways very fair. Very fairly to the AOCs of the world, because now AOC can sit here and say, oh, what's this? Oh, you guys are always like, oh, we can't afford this. How is it going to be paid for? Blah, blah, blah. Well, look at this. When it comes to bailing out the bankers, you guys don't give a shit about that. You only ask those questions when it's like for free health care or something like that. So, you know,
she's right.
Yeah, no, she's absolutely right. Absolutely right. Now, I mean, we could be righter than her and say, yeah, there's right. No money for any of this stuff. But she's got a hell of a fair point to make arguing against your average Republican.
We're socializing the losses for the biggest corporations in America. For the most powerful companies, they get socialized losses.
Yeah. And the thing that I just wish that they would recognize is that it's not, and I tried to gently make this point when I was on Jimmy Dore's show, that it's like, there's no such thing as free. None of this is free. Resources are finite. So what you're saying now is that the Americans have to put on their back this socialized losses for these corporations. That does cost something. It is absolutely going to cost the American people something. And you can only put so much of it off on the future.
I guess it's going to be free when they inflate all of our dollars and wealth to be worth nothing. And the bank just has access to unlimited of whatever the new currency is. So, you know. Yeah. The whole apparatus above us is going to be fine when they basically, it's like the casino. They just at some point take all the cash off the table.
Yeah. You know, I got like some responses from people when I was on the Jimmy Dore show, which, again, I really enjoyed doing. And I hope to be back there. I'm going to reach out to him and see if he'll come do a part of the problem episode. I'd love to have him on. But one of the things that, you know, you get, I get a lot of things from different people who are libertarians who'd be like, oh, you should have said this or you should have said that. And, you know, maybe you could have hit him on this point or, you know, and sometimes they're right. It's not like they're making bad points. It's just, it's when you're in that situation, you have limited time. You really have to kind of pick your battles and you have to decide what avenue you're going to go down. And if you say something that's going to sound like outrageous to a left winger, you got to be ready to defend it, and you only have so much time, so it's difficult to navigate sometimes.
Also, I would say the worst narrative about libertarians is that somehow we're secretly the ideology that pushes like the worst of the conservative party, like we're the excuse for cutting programs. You could kind of talk that better than I can, but you kind of skirted that by instantly going, no, I recognize government as being the biggest problem.
Well, right. But that is the truth. I mean, look, if the left-wing worldview were correct, or if I believed that it was correct, and that government could really help poor, needy people, and if we cut those programs, these poor, needy people will be screwed, I wouldn't be a libertarian. I mean, I wouldn't. I would be for the guy. Like, I wouldn't just sit back on my principles if those principles, when enacted, were going to lead to misery for human beings. Like, I'm a libertarian because I care about human beings. You know what I mean? I'm just convinced this is a better way to help them. And it's also, you know, it's the morally justified position as far as I see it. But there was one point that I really thought, and I just picked, I was like, okay, I just kind of addressed something else. Because I just didn't think we had enough time to really get into it. But it was really, I thought to me, like what Jimmy Dore said, and it was a similar thing to what Sam Cedar said when I was on his show back in the day, which really to me almost demonstrated the difference in the worldview between someone like you and me and someone like Jimmy Dore, or even someone like Sam Cedar, who I don't think is as good of a liberal or a leftist as Jimmy Dore is. But he said, you know, in response to the point that you just addressed, where I was like, well, government's the problem. Government's the one who kills, you know, steals, imprisons, destroys more lives than anybody else. So I don't want to use this, you know, system. And he said, you know, the way I look at it, Jimmy Dore said something to the effect of, the way I look at it, it's a vessel. It's kind of like money. It's like, well, you could build a bomb with your money, or you could build a hospital with your money. You know, you could do something really bad with this system or something really good with this system. And Sam Cedar said the same thing to me. He said, you know, government's a vessel. It's, you know, we might be doing lots of bad things with it right now. And I agree with you. We shouldn't be doing those bad things, but we could do a lot of really good things with it. Right. And on some level, that's true. Like, on some level, in a theoretical universe, you could do good with government. You know, I don't know. I'm sure there's out there right now, there's some, you know, bad person with money and some good person without money. And you could take it from that bad person and give it to the good person who's going to do more good with it. You know, like in theory, this, if you were, you know, writing a computer program, you could write out a world where a government does good things. So I kind of get the point. But it's almost like if you were to say, okay, well, I think dictatorship is a vessel, right? I mean, you could have a dictator who, like, one guy unilaterally, no Congress, no parliament, nothing, one dictator, central authority, runs the military, runs the whole economy, runs the whole country. That's a vessel, you know? I mean, he could do some good stuff or he could do some bad stuff. But I think if I were to, you know, present that to Sam Cedar or Jimmy Dore, they'd immediately see what the problem with that is. Is that, well, no, but you're creating this unbelievable amount of power and putting it in one person's hands. And you might hope that he does good with it, but come on, we know that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So it's not that it's like it is a vessel, but we know that this is always going to tend toward corruption. And that more or less is just the argument about government. It's that it's like, yeah, in theory, they, like, I guess they could maybe do some good things. But why is it that in reality, governments are the biggest killers and kidnappers and prisoners and destroyers of nations? Like, why is that? And it's for the same reason. It's because it's by its very nature a power center that has more power than any other group in society. That's the very nature of what government is. Otherwise, it's not government. Yeah.
Sometimes the way I think about it, I don't know if I've seen anyone else quite put it this way. It might not even make sense. But like, if you saw this just equation that there's like a million different calculations going on, but there's this equation of every action that every human being is doing. And then on this side, it's the value that's created. So to whatever extent on the equation side, you introduce a factor called force into the decision-making process, the value side is going to go down. to the extent that there's competition over resources or competition over getting you goods, that's when all of a sudden, like, the hive mind and everyone's computational powers just creates more value. So every aspect of government is, in some way, it's introducing some aspect of force, which is going to be limiting the options by which you start creating value. So like so what's interesting about your dictator model is to them, so they realize right away, well, dictatorship, so there's a ton of force. So government is just less force, but you're still putting force into the equation.
Right. And the only difference between a dictatorship and a democracy is that instead of the will of one person enforced on all of society, it's the will of 51% enforced on all of society. Now, I could see where you would argue that's better, but it's certainly not. It certainly doesn't make it justified. I mean, unless you are convinced somehow that magically the 51% is always right. But of course, we all know that's not true.
The argument, I take this from, I think his name's like Bruce Buno Mascot, some political science guy from NYU. I used to read his stuff a lot and I liked it. But he had this thing called the selectorate theory, which is basically the larger the voting group is, or the decision-making group is, the more people you have to give out goods to. So like if you got a dictator, what does he have, like two generals he has to give shit to in order to stay in power? So that's all he's going to give shit to. If you got a representative democracy, so now you got to give shit to the 51% of people that are going to keep you in office. So at least you're giving out something to more people. So it's kind of like the larger the group of people are that you have to give goods to in order to stay in power, like that's kind of the mechanics of it. I have to give shit to whoever is going to keep me in power. The less people I have to give it to, the more I just give to a select amount of individuals.
No, okay, that's an interesting perspective, but I just anyway, no, that's interesting. I have to think about that a little bit. So let's talk a bit about the politics of everything that's going on right now, because of course we are in the middle of a presidential election year. Somehow that's going to happen, and Joe Biden, you know, right before all of this craziness broke out, Joe Biden pretty much sewed up the nomination, made it basically impossible for Bernie to have a path toward the nomination, and seemed to be the presumptive nominee. It's been pretty damn weird, though, how Joe Biden has responded since this. He went dark for about 5 days at the beginning of this crisis, which was just, to me, unbelievable. I mean, you would have to think that anybody who's like a campaign, you know, advisor or a political strategist or anything like that would just traditionally taking all the actual people involved. But if this happened in a presidential year, you'd be like, you have to have your face on television now.
Because basically you have an opportunity for nearly unlimited airtime. And if you're trying to sell yourself, that normally is a benefit. Like Cuomo right now is, I mean, people are talking about it. I think it might happen, the whole run, but that guy has done so well with his airtime and just showing off his being, you know, seemingly capable or calming or whatever people like about him. He's done a very good job of showcasing himself, just kind of being charismatic and presidential, which Biden's done the opposite of, realizing, oh my God, the more exposure I have, the more exposed I am. People, yes. And that's what's wild. And in this climate, I don't think you can really just hide like that. It's not, people want to see you up front showing off that you're capable. You can't do the quiet hideaway thing.
Right. So I compared the thing that's going on with Cuomo to what happened with Rudy Giuliani after 9/11. And there's some loose comparison there where Giuliani just came out. He was there. He was hugging people. He gave a couple, you know, press conferences about, you know, like, we're going to be strong and yada, yada, yada. Says some things. And everybody was like, well, mayor hero. He's the greatest. He can, you know, it's just something about in these times when people are scared, they rally to their leaders. And this is that on steroids. I mean, this is a situation where everybody is pretty much trapped in their home. They're at home, and every fucking day there's a new press conference. We're just sitting there. We're watching, you know, like in our state, we're watching de Blasio, the mayor, and Cuomo, the governor, and then you watch Trump. And then everybody in whatever state you're in, it's the same with your governor, and he's coming and giving you updates and all this. And then Trump comes out and gives a speech with his, you know, task force behind him and the doctors and Mike Pence and all these people. And so all of these politicians are just on your television speaking directly to the American people every single day. And Joe Biden goes dark for 5 straight days. And then when he comes out, he's giving these, like, horribly, you know, just you know, like just like cratering into himself. You know, yeah, that whole thing. Oh my God, it's so weird. Is a teleprompter goes out and he doesn't know what the hell to say. Then he gave an interview. He gave the interview on MSNBC where he just like collapsed into himself in some type of black hole where he just goes, yeah, I don't know. Like in the like, who does this? And it is starting to seem to me like, I don't know. I, you know, Scott Horton said this when he was on the show. And at first I was kind of like, yeah, maybe I could see it.
They're going to drop him. They're going to do it. They need Sanders, I think, to formally drop out, because otherwise maybe there's like a claim that he's second in line. But I think very close to when the real campaigning like ramps up, there's going to be an announcement. Hey, Biden's got dementia. We didn't realize that it was this aggressive, and
some
we thought
health
it was our
issue.
Best option.
They may not say dementia.
Yeah.
They may say some other health issue or something
and
like
Cuomo,
that.
Cuomo's our guy.
I mean, if I were a Democrat, right, and I was saying this, I was actually talking to my wife the other day, and I was saying this to her. I was like, look, if I were a Democrat, and that's all I cared about was the Democrats taking back the Oval Office, I would be like, we need to do whatever we can to get Cuomo in there and Biden out. We have to. That is the only option that we have right now.
And Cuomo can beat Trump for sure.
Maybe in this environment, he's got a much better shot than Biden. No question about it. A much, much better shot than Biden does. And, you know, and then I saw it was like right after, like an hour after I was having this conversation with my wife, I saw on Twitter that fucking Bill Maher tweeted out the same thing. Now, OK, it's just Bill Maher, but Bill Maher is like a pretty popular liberal, and he's got, you know, like 10 million Twitter followers or something like that. And he's tweeting out, he's going, we need to fucking drop Biden and go with Cuomo. He made some baseball analogy, like when a pitcher just doesn't have his stuff and you got to tap him on the shoulder and be like, you're out of here. We're putting in the closer. And so, I mean, look, who the hell knows what's going to happen?
What's Cuomo's kryptonite? Because I don't know enough about him. I do know that of New York, he's pulled some real shady shit that basically we run a crazy deficit that he just rolls over every year. Something really shady happens every January. We're like, I don't really know quite how they cook the books, but we are hugely financially insolvent, New York as a state. And they pull some scam every year where they roll over some of the debt to the next year, which means that like it kind of snowballs where every year they're carrying more of last year's debt. I don't really know what the scheme is.
Yeah, I just don't think, I mean, I don't think this is going to be his kryptonite. I mean, how is Donald Trump, you're going to be looking at a $2 trillion deficit for the first time in American history this year. How's he going to run, you know, against somebody?
I'm saying what is the big dirt on Cuomo? Like, we were able to kind of look at most of these guys right away and go, all right, Elizabeth Warren doesn't have a chance. She claimed to be an Indian and she's nasty. Bernie Sanders, he's too socialist. Biden's too stupid. What's the Cuomo thing that, you know, Trump will expose right away?
You know, I really don't know.
I really don't know what it is. Yeah.
It certainly doesn't pop into mind as quickly as these other people. You know what I mean? Like, if you could go down the list on every one of the Democratic candidates so far, and it's just like right there. It's so obvious in front of you. I don't know. You know, Cuomo is the son of a former governor who's the governor now. His brother is that CNN anchor. He's from a very powerful family, and I'm sure there's some dirt out there on them, and maybe that'll come out more. But I don't know. I don't know what Trump's angle would be, and I kind of can tell what Cuomo's angle would be. And Cuomo's been smart, unlike de Blasio, who's just been like Cuomo's done a little bit of this, but not like de Blasio, who comes out right away and is just complaining about Trump and just makes himself look so small and partisan. Cuomo kind of rose above that a little bit, and he's done a good job of you know, kind of protecting, creating his image through this whole thing. So I don't know how they would actually do that. The only way to do it is you'd have to go to the convention and have all of Biden's delegates throw their support behind Cuomo. It's not impossible. It could happen. Or it could be someone else theoretically, but I'm just thinking more and more that I think that the more people look, remember we said, we were saying this like months and months and months ago that we were like, oh my God, if Biden wins the nomination, it's going to be so entertaining watching the media pretend that there's nothing wrong with Joe Biden. It's gotten so bad that I don't think anybody can pretend this. It's like putting up a guy with one leg and telling everybody he's got two legs, but you're sitting there looking at a stump.
You also, that's funny. That's a good one. Do you ever, did you see there was a new claim against him for like, it wasn't quite sexual assault, but being a creep. It was from a former staffer. So it's a little
Holds. There was a straight up sexual assault allegation that came out against Biden.
I was skimming the Vox article, and it's always interesting how these things, it's always interesting the timing on these things, because you know that they've had these stories for a while. And so I don't know why they would start running with it now. But even so, we saw more of that kid sniffing after he said he would never do it again. So that's going to be endless. But it's going to be interesting, I guess, to also see if maybe he goes down on like sexual assault claims. And then this is now the reason why we can't have him.
So you've had several women, something like 11 different women that have said that Joe Biden touched them inappropriately or some shit like that. But there was this one chick who was a former staffer of his who came out and said that he forcibly fingered her. Now,
missed that. That's the good part of the article. Put that in the first part. I was getting bored. They were talking about comments of nice legs.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it was in the same article, but this is a woman who's come out. She recorded a podcast about it. It's been like, you know, a lot of people have been, you know, talking about it online. Now, again, I don't know. And I want to make sure I'm the most consistent motherfucker, you know, here, because that's what I do. So I don't know. Like I always say with all of these wild accusations, I don't know. I don't know if there's truth to it. I don't know that there's not truth to it. Maybe this is exactly what happened. Maybe it didn't happen at all. Maybe it happened somewhere in between what she's saying and reality. Who the hell knows? But I could say this. There's already way more evidence in this accusation than there ever was against Kavanaugh. Way more evidence, because this was actually, in fact, a chick who was a staffer of his. And like just that alone makes way more evidence. So, you know, it certainly is going to be something. Man.
Parade her in front of a hearing to talk about her creepy, having those creepy death fingers up inside of you.
Oh, my God.
You thought the Kavanaugh reaction was bad from that, you know, weird looking chick. Just wait till you hear this story.
Well, it's going to be the interesting thing is that it's going to be the big question about all of this stuff, right? Is can Joe Biden get out the vote against Donald Trump? And that's really what the issue is, because, of course, lots of people could say, I already hear the response being like, well, Donald Trump was accused of X, Y, and Z by these women, so it's a wash or something like that. But the issue here politically for Joe Biden is, can he get out his base, the Democratic base? And I saw one poll the other day that said that about 15% of Bernie Sanders supporters are considering voting for Trump. And that's voting for Trump. How about just not voting? You know, that's going to be very tough. Bernie Sanders supporters were getting super excited for their moment. Like, they thought this guy was going to win. Look, I thought Bernie Sanders was going to win the nomination. I mean, so I understand why they thought. And now they have to come back to reality and go, oh, man, not only do we not get Bernie Sanders, but it's not like we're getting, you know, some other progressive. We're getting Joe Biden. You're getting the embodiment. I mean, just like Hillary Clinton, it's the embodiment of what the Democratic establishment has been for the last 30 plus years. That's what you're getting out of Joe Biden. And he's just not, a lot of them, a lot more than vote for Trump, just aren't going to vote. And then you go, well, what is the issues that have animated the left over the last few years? Well, of course, one big thing is the Democratic Socialist stuff that throw into that category, Medicare for All, Green New Deal, all of these things. Joe Biden's bad on all of those issues. And then what's the other big thing that's animated the left over the last few years? Well, it's the Me Too movement. So the question is, what effect do all of these women lining up accusing Joe Biden of anything from sexual assault to sexual harassment, inappropriate touching, all of this stuff? What effect does that have on galvanizing his support? And I don't know, but it's not nothing.
I said at the beginning of the whole Me Too thing, believe all women who say that Biden touched them. I said that. If it's a claim against Biden, it's true. I can just tell you.
Yeah, all of a sudden that believe all women thing, you know, when it comes to bite Democrats in the ass, they're like, let's believe some of them.
Yeah. Did you see in Rhode Island what's going on with pulling over? Yeah. So just to kind of give you the scary picture of the draconian state that might be to come, they're using a the flying droid things? What are the drones? They're using drones in Wales, just telling people to go back inside. But, like, you see in China the health monitor they're doing, and then what's-his-name just said something real creepy, Snowden, that, you know, with all the phone tracking that they're doing, it's not going to be that hard to link that to health monitoring as well. And then you see all their surveillance on social media. It's getting creepy, dude.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's this is creepy, and it's and it's really like it's unbelievable how in an emergency, I shouldn't even put that in air quotes because maybe this is an emergency, but in emergency times, how easy it is to get all of this shit ramped through. The other thing I thought about that thing with Rhode Island was it's funny to me that, you know, for all the people like, you know, Trump won on his, we have to restrict, you know, immigration and all of this stuff, and we have, you know, anybody who talked about, you know, closing down the borders or anything like that, it's like, well, that's impossible. We can't do that. We're not going to go around like arresting people and this and that. And now this happens and it's like, New Yorkers, nope, can't come in. Sorry. Just like that. Like, it's just that easy to restrict freedom of travel for Americans.
I'm surprised that they haven't shut the New York City bridges yet, and I still think it's coming.
Yeah. Well, you might be right about that. You might be right. And you know what? If they do, we'll do another fireside chat. We'll talk about it. And I like that name, the Fireside
Chat. I'm going to build a fire thing for this. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to do that. Yeah.
Very good.
You're going to come back next week, whole construction project.
Rob burned his house down trying to build a fireplace. This is the last time we'll talk to him. All right, buddy. Well, as always, good to check in with you. And we'll do it again in a couple days. Stay safe. Stay corona-free. Stay AIDS-free. We all love you.